6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce. Not joined virtually, as always, by Anna Forsyth at E4603. No, she is out traveling the world. I believe she's in South Africa right now. I want to say that that's why she's left me something about a wedding and friends, you know, not inviting me. I don't exactly know what it is, but I was in search of a guest to join me in her absence. I mean, again, Anna and I had talked about the threat of me doing a solo show, but I'm not like Clay Emo, who you guys might remember. He does the solo bit often. And I was thinking, who could I invite? And so I, you know, was going through the list, and friend of the show, Lisa Martin, had said, get one of the former hosts to join you. I'm like, oh, okay. So I sent an email to Matt, and Matt told me he's just too busy. And, you know, that's Matt. And then I asked Matt, well, hey, could you see if Adam might be available? You know, the elusive Adam. And Matt replied to say he was too busy to reach out to Adam, which is a shame because I don't know how to reach out to Adam. And as Anna talked about, he's probably off, you know, doing some, you know, leading a summer camp or something along those lines. And that, and I'm like, oh, I mean, there's Nicole Van Zanten who used to join me occasionally. She might be available. And finally, I was like, you know, maybe I should ask Clay. I think y'all remember Clay, and you know, sure enough, he was able to fit me into his very busy schedule. I think he gave up dinner tonight so that he could record the show. But welcome, Canuck Clay, Clay Emo.
Thank you, Chris. It's always nice to be back, even though I'm like your eighth stringer, but I'll take it. I'll take it. The fact that I'm still on your list, that means a lot to me, brother.
I mean, you're on the list. I won't say you're that high on the list. I had to go down through a few names.
Obviously.
I was going to reach out to you like straight away, and I'm like, no, I want to, you know, have an episode where you're here with me and Anna, because, you know, as podcast lore dictates, you and Anna can never be in the same show together.
Well, I don't know if I can handle a 45 minutes of her just insulting me. I need you to help me. You got to stand up for your former Steveston neighbor, brother.
Hey, you're a Richmond Colt through and through. Why would I stand up for you?
Although I will say one thing, though, thank you for the invite. Always happy to, and people know, we won't go through the whole story once again, but avid listeners, the loyal listeners of the C4 podcast know that it was you and I that started this. You and I in your blistering hot, actually, it's kind of, I guess it's kind of a fitting that we're doing right now, your blistering hot apartment in Steveston. But I will say, I did have dinner with my mom because I didn't get to see her yesterday, but I saw her tonight and it was perfect. Got out to Surrey straight from work, came back, and I still had 15 minutes to relax and get ready to join you. So it all worked out just perfectly.
Oh, well, I'm glad it did work out. I mean, that said, you're leaving this episode after we record to go and record your Canucks After Dark podcast, I think, with Parker, right?
That is correct. Yes. Yeah. I try and stack them up.
Yeah. And then, you know, normally you'd have a, you know, live show. And again, I was messaging you, you know, like, you sure that you're going to be okay? You're, you know, lining up everything you're up to. I'm like, I'm not as busy as you are, but I did ask you, like, how is it that you can manage all that you do when I struggle to like record two podcasts, you know, weekly, if that, like right now, my other podcast's weekly, this one's bi-weekly, and I don't know how you do it. I mean,
but your marriage is good. Your parenting is good. You got a good daughter. Your job is good. So you're doing things right. That's fair to say, correct?
Oh, I'm definitely doing things right, but I'm pretty confident you're doing a, you know, knockout job yourself. So,
Well, I'll say this real quick and then I'll get off my soapbox and we'll talk hockey stuff. I'm not saying I'm more busy or less busy than anyone else, but I will say this. A lot of people, Chris, they use busyness as a self-fulfilling prophecy, or they spend more time complaining about how busy they are than they actually do things to try and get out of that or to remedy it. I always say you can always make time for the things and people that you love to do. It might not be enough time or as much as you want, but you can still do it. And you asked me and I moved a couple things around because I want to do this. And I think more people got to do that. They got to just simply make sacrifices and do what they need to do what they want to do instead of complaining about how full their Google Calendar is. Okay, I'm off my soapbox now. Thanks, man.
Yeah, and do what Clay says. You know, when Chris reaches out to say join the podcasts, move your schedule and say yes.
Exactly.
Speaking of busy, though, the Vancouver Canucks are likely going to have a busy offseason, or they will have to have a busy offseason if they want to make the next season something better than this season happened to be. So we're going to touch on that a little bit. Obviously, draft lottery has come and gone, and players themselves are keeping busy in the offseason. I want to get some of your thoughts on what they've been up to individually. And as always, our offseason schedule seems to have been coordinated with the Stanley Cup playoffs, where we get to record in between each and every round, and so we can set up the two conference finals before we talk and, you know, reminisce about all sorts of other, you know, old dad things. But without further ado, let's rewind. Straight away, Clay, did you have a 3% idea that the Vancouver Canucks were going to get first overall? Like, was that 3% enough for you to say it's going to happen?
Chris, you know, I'm a man of faith. I would take a 0.3% chance. Honestly, I was watching there with my family, and as we saw the first five cards, 16, 15, 14, 13, 12, and you knew that as long as one of those five teams didn't change, mm-hmm. you knew the Canucks were not dropping, at least. So it felt pretty good until, of course, the inevitable 11. Happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in the office when it was going down, and actually, I might have been starting my commute home when it finally is on TV. But I, you know, for our listeners may recall, had said that I had absolutely no faith the Vancouver Canucks would get first overall. It just, even if they had the best odds, I'm like, the hockey gods, they just look down on the Vancouver Canucks and say, eh. So, I mean, I'm maybe that pessimist, and, you know, it's one of the reasons why when we started the show, it worked out well. I'm the pessimist, you're the optimist, and we sort of
somehow was Matt? In the middle ground. What was Matt then?
If I was the pessimist, I don't know. What's worse than that?
I don't know. Something. Yes. We were not saying it on the
show. Yeah. It's probably not appropriate for a G-rated show. Yeah. Canucks After Dark. Maybe that's the show. I mean, the implication by the name and all that.
Yes.
But yeah, I when I heard that the Vancouver Canucks were going in at 11 and coming out with 11, I'm like, that's not bad. I kind of wish they were a little bit lower. And, you know, to some who have suggested, why did they have to play the, you know, last, you know, month and a half of the season like it was their own playoff? I'm not upset by that, because I will profess, you know, strategic gameplay. But at the end of the day, it's a deep draft. The Vancouver Canucks will hopefully find something that will fit. But where I feel they're better suited is to either load up more picks, or, you know, as we imagine, maybe use that 11 to help grease the skids on some contracts or so. Like, I'm not suggesting give up the first round pick.
I'm
really hesitant to suggest that. But, you know, when you look at the Vancouver Canucks and their requirement to become cap compliant and improve upon their roster, all cards have to be on the table, no?
No, I agree with you. And you hate to talk about moving our first round pick, but, you know, Chris, we don't have a second round pick to use as a sweetener. So I know we're going to get into this. If you're trying to move a Besser or a Garland or a Myers and you don't think you can do it straight up and you have to attach a sweetener, generally a sweetener, you don't want it to be your first rounder, but you see second rounders often use, mm-hmm. and we don't have one. And so a third rounder is not going to get you anything. So yeah. Do you move back in the first round and pick up a later pick and then maybe use that? There's so many. And some would say, no, just keep the first round pick. Just keep it where it is. You might get a good center. You might get a right hand D. You might get whatever. I think that's kind of makes why it's so fascinating, Chris, is, and we want to see improvement now. And we're getting impatient, obviously.
Yeah. And, you know, should be fair to suggest that, oh, next year's second round would be good to toss up. Well, guess what? Canucks don't have that either, right? Like,
oh gosh,
they don't have a second round in 23, nor do they have one in 24. Oh. So, like, you're right. The sweeteners are maybe much sweeter than we would prefer them to be.
Yeah.
who knows? I mean, Canucks do have some late round picks, and maybe they can go and take someone else's second and you know, wheel and deal.
Yeah.
It's just it's a tough situation for the Canucks to find themselves in, no matter how you look at it. I mean, even the front office is still talking about needing to move some contracts. Teams know this, and you know, the Canucks are not going to be in a position where they can go and say, hey, we've got a gently used Connor Garland here. You know, we'll give you a deal. Teams are going to know, like, oh, well, gently used or not.
Yeah.
What is it in for me? And I, outside of picks, like, who else might you sweeten it with? Like, when we start going down prospect depth, are there any names that you would say, no, that player could not be a throw-in? Or is it fair to say even the no throw-ins are also on the table?
Well, you look at the great question, Chris. You look at the Abbotsford Canucks roster, or guys that you expect to be in Abbotsford next year, and how many of them would actually be appealing? Like Hoglander, I think we agree is likely going to make the team next year. But is it McDonough? Is it Linus Karlsson? Klimovic? Atu Ratu? I think that's it. Archie Bain not going to get you anything. Lekari Mäki, I don't think they want to give up on yet. Max Sasson, I'm not. So the prospect pool is a bit deeper, thank goodness, because this Abbotsford team did well and I probably overperformed. But there's still, and there, you know, I love Hirose, not just because he's half Japanese, but is Hirose or Rathbone or any of those guys get it done? I don't know. I actually don't know.
Yeah. I think Hirose's a unique situation as a, you know, the position that he's in, and he is going into arbitration. So, you know, if the Vancouver Canucks aren't entirely sure that he fits financially within the bigger picture.
Yep.
You know, I could see another team saying, hey, thanks for, you know, working them into the system. We'll take it from here. Beyond that, it's a catch 22.
Yep.
Whatever depth that the Vancouver Canucks have that becomes desirable are likely the players that the Vancouver Canucks are counting on, because they don't have someone behind that player, you know, waiting in the wings. I mean,
yeah,
you right. And I think when we started talking on this show, how many years back, we're talking about depth as being a problem. But back then, that wasn't an issue because it was understood. The Canucks had a window. They were going for it. Yeah. That window closed. And for one reason or another, what depth they would build suddenly found its way in the roster. Like, how many of those season ticket letters came out showcasing, you know, Brock Besser, Thatcher Demko, Elias Pettersson, Bo Horvat to some respect, though he was more core, you know, by that time. Like, every year, yeah, look, the depth we have, great young core, great young players.
Yeah.
7 years later, these great young players, they're older now. Like, Besser didn't make this year's season ticket holder letter, right? Like,
and speaking of marketing for next year, have you seen the commercial that everyone's talking about?
No, I have not yet.
But you've heard the talk about it?
Yes.
A little, yeah. So I actually thought, for what it's worth, I didn't think it was that bad, but maybe I'm just easy to please, but no, in a Canucks standpoint. But yeah, it was indeed the words of structure, habits, and standard. Those were the three... the three buzzwords, and then they showed some practice footage, some game footage, and they showed Petey and Hughes, of course, but they also showed guys like Joshua and whatever. So I was fine with it. They're obviously leaning into the personality of Rick Tocchet, even more so than the players, which might be a bit of a mistake, but I know it got roundly trashed around Canucks Twitter.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, though, because you think about the focus has been for the last, 6 years. This is a playoff team. This is a playoff team. This is a playoff team. This year, this is a team that's going to play hard, right? Like, in fairness, I would have looked at this team as maybe being closer to being a playoff team than some of these previous rosters. Like, even in the last two seasons when Anna and I were going in, like, it's playoffs or bust, that was based on the situation because we were looking at contracts coming up. We were looking at, you know, the cap and the, you know, static nature of it over these last few seasons. Like, there is a window that's going to slam shut, and this is when it needs to happen. Because if you can get that to happen, you know, it's a win-win. Yeah, you play off hockey, great, more revenue, great. But also, the players would be performing at such a level that the desirability goes up. And suddenly, a Tyler Myers, if he's playing really, really well, is a player that you can find a home for if need be. And I'm not trying to suggest the Canucks cannot. Mm. There is a long running understanding that big defensemen always find a home.
Wow.
Contract, but still.
Yeah. No, everything you said makes sense. Everything you said makes sense. And when you, I know we're going to get into this, but when you see Vegas in the finals again, the conference finals, when you see Seattle one game away, can you imagine, Chris, we were this close to having an all expansion Western Conference final.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I would have, okay. Had that occurred, I would have been okay with it. If only for a team like the Vancouver Canucks to look at that and say, oh, maybe we should copy good value, build from within. I mean, Vegas and Seattle obviously did not quote unquote build from within, but they put together good value rosters where you're getting, you know, what you were paying for and then some. Whereas the Vancouver Canucks are on the other side of the spectrum. Like, have they really been getting what they've been paying for? I mean, they're Jim Benning signed players out of free agency as a solution, and free agency is like swinging for the fences every time. You're going to strike out far more frequently than you are to put one out of the park.
Yes. Yes.
And you pay a hefty price doing so. That's what Jim Benning seemed to do. Where Jim may have done well and probably had a better focus, and whether it's Jim or not, or the people that he had under him, was identifying, you know, through amateur scouting, through the college ranks, what have you, these players that they could have built good value from.
Mm.
And I feel that they could have maybe tooled better that way. But hey, water under the bridge.
Yeah.
Current regime said, we gotta make changes. And I mean, I'm trying to think. I don't think we talked since trade deadline and went onward. But the Vancouver Canucks were making changes that didn't seem in line with, well, we need to get rid of contracts. What did they do? They found some. We need to get some picks. They gave some up.
They were doing okay all the way up into the Hronek trade. Actually, they're fine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, getting Josh Bloom and getting rid of Luke Shen for picks. Yeah, for a pick. So this is kind of a nice way to bridge, I guess, the draft talk to the offseason talk. What's your confidence level? And regardless of what you think is a good offseason, what's your confidence level that Alvin's going to have a good offseason?
Oh, I'm not that confident. That's not a knock on Alvin.
Yeah.
It's that, like, you know, you look at the contract situation. I mean, beyond the player, like whether it's a JT Miller or whomever, like who is it that you could arguably trade without sweetening or taking something not so good in return? And the list is small. You're not giving up Pedersen. I mean, that is a non-starter. You're not giving up Hughes, non-starter. So right off the bat, you're, you know, the players that speak for themselves. For Besser, I like Besser. I hope things work out for Brock, but I kind of have come to the realization that it might work out better in another organization at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does someone take his 6-6 deal? I don't think so. Like, no. I don't, I, not to the extent that the Vancouver Canucks can get value back.
Right. Right. And I have, I know you like Besser. I like him a lot too. To me, he says the right things, but to me, Chris, it's not lip service. I genuinely believe that he wants to be here. I genuinely believe that he disappointed himself, and I genuinely believe he's going to have a better season next year. But is that 6.6 more palatable than a Garland's 4.9? When they're kind of even when it comes to 5-on-5 and Garland gets no power play time.
Well, no. And that's, you know, you compare those two players and that's a, you know, phenomenal comparison. If they're the same, I'll take the 4.9.
Yes.
In fact, if I am another team who's looking at the market, I would prefer the 4.9 over the 6.6. Where the catch here though, is that 4.9 has got that extra year on top of it. So you're now betting that we're getting the 4.9 value.
Yep.
For 4 more years, I guess 3 more years if I'm doing the math correct. But like, I feel the Vancouver Canucks are in this weird spot where they're having to go in and, you know, whether it be a Besser or a Garland, simply to free up that space.
Yep.
Like, I don't know what else they can do. JT Miller, would you trade him?
Would I trade him?
Yeah. Like if a deal came in, I mean, and I'm not talking about the Pittsburgh rumor where it was like 4 billion picks and a bunch of players and 7 teams involved or whatever it is. But if a reasonable offer came in for JT, would you trade him before the NMC kicks in?
Well, and hypotheticals are so tricky to deal with, Chris, because we can build up any case we want to build our own argument. But no, if there's a reasonable offer, yes, I do listen. But when I say that to you, Chris, I know that I don't think they're going to, because I know how much Rick Tocchet loves this player. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be an amazing deal for them to even consider it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'm of that thought. Like, I'm maybe more willing to, if it's a reasonable offer, maybe pull the trigger and actually press the reset button. But that carries down a trickle effect of, okay, what other players do I have now paying attention to this and may start to cast their gaze elsewhere?
Is PD going to want to resign here long term?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is this catch 22. And then I do agree that other players, if you're going to go into the free agent market, are going to say, like, well, wait a minute. They offered a player a deal, signed him to it long term, but we're still trying to dish him leading up to like the minute before the clock struck midnight. Like,
right.
Yeah. The optics there are off.
Yeah.
But hey, I get that if that's the only deal that you can make that gives you the cap flexibility that you so need.
Yeah.
I feel the Canucks have found themselves in this position where they'd have to make that type of deal.
So we're looking at the top six. When it comes to top six moneymakers, we touched on Pettersson, Besser, Miller, Garland. Kuzmenko's not going anywhere. They just signed him for that 2 years. So what about Beauvillier? He's got 1 year left.
Yeah, Beauvillier is interesting. I think there could be value in finding him another home. I mean, look at how he performed in Vancouver once he arrived.
Yeah.
I mean, he was playing quite well, providing the production that was lost with Bo Horvat's departure. I genuinely wonder if Rick Tocchet's comments, though, find their way into the front office of other teams, because Rick had called out his compete level near the end of the season, which is an interesting thing to do so publicly in a season where he is producing. Maybe he's not giving you the two-way game you got out of Bo before his departure.
Right.
But here's an asset you're talking down. Like,
that's true.
Like, again, I don't know the entire story here. It just seems odd. But I think Beauvillier is an opportunity to find a place to go that may not require you to take something back or to give up too much.
Beyond
that, it's JAG money on up front, but where the problem lay is in the defense, which is why Filip Ronek was, you know, was a player who was traded for, because if we're gonna, you know, fill right, you know, defenseman depth, this is how we have to do it. Oh, great. So that 4-4 you freed up and gave you the room would have been nice. I I'm not suggesting the Canucks look to trade him now. But is that based on the idea that maybe Myers they found a home for him? Like, and I'm not suggesting that's what they have to do, but if the Vancouver Canucks were to then have, you know, Ronek fill the Myers shoes, guess what? That position that you thought you solved, you just created a hole in.
Yeah, great point. I would be fine with Ronek, a newly signed Bear, and like a Jet Wu or something, and now you're saving $5 million and getting rid of Tyler Myers. And Chris, I'm looking at the Canucks cap friendly page. I'm sure you've seen it. It's ugly from a standpoint of this. The reason why they're over the cap already, you either make $4 million or more, or $1 million or less. We have no guys, none, next season that make between $1 and $4 million. And those are the guys like the Jason Dickinsons where you can true mate hockey trades. Right, you're not throwing in sweeteners because the guy makes too much, or you're not basically getting anything because the guy sucks it doesn't suck, but he only makes league minimum. So we have no guys in the $1 to $4 million range that we can make hockey trades with. That's the challenging part too. It's weird the way we've set up our salaries.
Well, the JAGs that we became accustomed to previously, you know, the $1-2 million, $3 million contracts, they were paid 3-4-5 under the Benning regime. But again, that was because of free agency. You can't, if you go out to the market in free agency to find your JAGs, you're going to overpay. You wait until they obviously lead up to the season, or you more smartly offer your PTOs. In this instance, I kind of feel that they were able to get those contracts off the books. However, that leaves them with anchors or
good point.
Chains without an anchor.
That's a really good point, actually, that it might have been intentional the way they did it. That's a really good point.
But
Ethan Bear might be the only guy. Ethan might be the only JAG then, because he needs a new contract.
Yeah, and he is arbitration eligible. So, you know, there's possible. Well, he's going to get more.
Yeah.
Like he, the way he performed, injury, sure. But I think he gets paid more. So
yeah,
there's your mid-range character.
There's our 2-5 guy. There you go. Yeah.
The one.
Yeah.
I mean,
by the way, was Jag your nickname in high school?
No,
were you just an average?
I was less than Jag. I was less than Jag. Yeah.
I must admit, when you first said Jag, I didn't know what you're talking about, and then I was thinking, we're talking about like guys that are mid average. Oh, just an average guy. Yeah,
just a guy. Yeah,
just a guy. Just a guy. Just a guy. Not even average. Just a
you
guy.
Know. And I guess you know, should we be discounting Tanner Pearson and Tucker Pullman?
Oh yeah, I forgot about those guys.
Like, I mean, injury wise. I don't know where they fit.
Oh yeah, those. Yeah, true. There, we found our Jags. Yeah,
right. McKayev ended the season hurt. Like this, so, going back to the conversation about how the Vancouver Canucks played that sort of final month and a half, as if it was like playoff hockey.
Yep.
They shut down McKayev, who had been playing hurt for so long.
Yep.
And to me, that was like, the Canucks have finally figured out how they can utilize. You know,
yep.
What needs to be done to be strategic. And then suddenly let's rush Demko back and play him, you know, at a pace of, was it, I think 70 games a season in the tail end. Let's put Quinn Hughes on the ice for 45 minutes. Yeah. I mean, I exaggerate, but
yeah,
I feel that the Vancouver Canucks could have been better able to, hey, you know, Quinn Hughes, you don't need to go and play him into the ice. Yeah. You know what you get. Look at all the depth in Abbotsford you can bring up and give the experience and time for a Calder Cup run, right?
Yes. And even Filip Hronek, you see the good and the bad in one guy. They trade for him, a good plays for the team. Game. Yeah, exactly. Plays 3 or 4 games. And then, oh, by the way, you're shut down for the season. So I don't know.
Very weird. So, I mean, other contracts like OEL still on the books. They're reticent to use buyouts.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
You know, like OEL is probably the only contract you look to buy out at this point because the others don't give you the value you probably want to achieve. But if ownership isn't keen to pay players money to go away as they have been in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, you think OEL's got a bounce back season in him, Chris?
I don't believe so. I was of the belief that a change of scenery when he was brought in might be the light at the end of the tunnel. Unfortunately, there was a stall in the tunnel and never got to that light.
Yeah.
I could be proven wrong. And this is the thing that I have said time and time again. I would love for this team and their players to go and show me how much of an idiot I actually am. Prove me wrong. Go win a cup. Serves me right.
Yep. I'll take that too.
Yeah. Take that. Rub it in my face.
Shove it in there.
That's right. You know, basement podcaster proven wrong. Canucks win cup. Hey, you know what? I will take that.
Awesome. I don't get me on paper. If there's no such thing as salaries, which is obviously very unrealistic, a top four of Hughes, a good OEL, Hronek, and a Baird. That's not amazing, but it's better than we've had in the past.
It is. It's 4 solid defensemen. Like when was the last time the Vancouver Canucks had 4 solid defensemen?
Since their runs. Exactly. Right?
Like it would have been 11, 12, maybe 13. But you know, once Ham Hughes was out of the picture, then it's just been a rotation of 2, maybe 3. Before we get into what's going on with the rest of the league, if you have been paying attention to social media, as I believe you do, you might know a little bit about Canucks social media. The Vancouver Canucks players have gotten on to their vacation to enjoy life outside of hockey. Well, most of them. There were a few that stayed in Vancouver to help work on their game and prepare for the World Championships, and that led to the Vancouver Canucks getting fined. But hey, small potatoes, whatever. What I find interesting, though, is how many people are upset that Canucks players are enjoying the summer and the time away from the game. Like JT Miller, for instance, there was pictures of him golfing or in a golf course in preparation. He had acquired a spot to play in a U.S. Open qualifier. And for those that aren't aware of how golf works, Open championships are truly that. There's no need for like a membership of a tour. You can qualify up the ranks. If you want a really fictionalized experience to understand this, watch the movie Tin Cup with Kevin Costner. But JT is got this opportunity to compete in a US Open qualifier. And the people are just going off. Like, he should be focused on hockey. He should be working on his game. He should be training. Like, golf sends a wrong message. And I'm thinking, dude, if I had an opportunity to play in an open qualifier right now, I'd go out there, embarrass myself, shooting like quadruple bogeys on every hole. But I would, like, that's an opportunity. And I don't know the final result, but it sounds like he did not qualify. And the way the qualifiers work, it's not like, oh, top 25, move on. It's like you're qualifying for like one or two spots in regions that grow.
Yeah, he shot a 78 today.
Oh, okay. So that's not going to win him an open championship.
He tied for 35th, Chris. And you're right. They take from today, they take the top 4 or 6. So he's a little bit off.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you got to consider like a 78 is significantly better than any round of golf that I might play unless I'm competing on a 9-hole course. I might have a 78, a little bit lower, but no, like, what are your thoughts? I mean, whether it be, you know, I think it was Kuzmenko is down in like South America or something. Yeah. You got PD on Instagram. Like, does any of this really matter?
No. And Canucks fans can't have their cake and eat it too. They can't complain that their players aren't accessible or that they have no personality or that they seem like there's no fun in the room. There's no leaders. There's no charisma. There's no personality. I think I said personality twice. And then they can't say we want more of that and then complain that JT Miller is having a great round of golf with his dad or Pedersen's on vacation and Kuzmenko is doing whatever surfboarding or windsurf, whatever that thing's called. So I don't get it. I don't get it. It would be different, man, if this was July or August and they're supposed to be here in Vancouver tomorrow for training camp. Like, it's April. There used to have eight teams as of two days ago still playing. Like, it's fine. Now, of course, if one of them gets hurt doing JT Miller, hopefully won't get hurt playing golf. But if someone gets hurt, then it's a different story. But it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, like I understand that, you know, Canucks Twitter is its own, you know, special
crazy
thing, but I do not get why an expectation is that somehow a player is on all the time.
Yeah,
like if I'm given an opportunity where I can take some time away from work and vacation and enjoy myself and live life, I do it. I don't necessarily have the opportunity that these players may have available to them, but I'm not going to fault them where they have no hockey to do to go out and enjoy that time. You're right. If let's say, you know, Petey is, you know, skydiving into active volcanoes, I might have some questions as to whether or not that is the smartest thing to accomplish.
Hey, Chris, by the way, because I haven't been on here for a while, do you still have feedback channels? Like if someone wants to write you a message or let you know, because is there a way that people can write to you somehow? Well,
yeah, I mean, we don't drop the email address all that often anymore, but it is thec4podcast@gmail.com. We generally say shoot us a note on Twitter.
Okay, shoot @thec4podcast. Shoot Chris a note because I think this has potential. Like, what's one activity you just don't want to see? So he had PD skydiving into active volcanoes. I will go with Kuzmenko popping wheelies on a motorcycle down a busy street in Manila. Like, okay, so just give Chris and the crew some of your far-fetched scenarios. What's the one activity you do not want to see Canucks players doing during the offseason, and they can have some fun with it on the next show?
Yeah, that's thanks for the call out. That's, you know, why we bring you in to do our promotional work for us, being the, you know, promotional mastermind you are.
Oh, I don't know that.
It sort of segues out, and this, we never talk about this, but maybe get your thoughts. Petey wanted to play in the World Championships. Couldn't get insured.
Yeah.
Or couldn't get insurance sufficient to have him insured for the potential of a long-term deal.
Right.
Now, there are some that suggest, well, Petey should just play for the, you know, pride of the jersey on his sweater. Others who understand the technical side of, well, insurance is important. But when it comes to World Championships, are you of the belief that players should answer the call and go? I'm not suggesting Petey didn't. much more complicated than that? Or do you think a player like, you know, Connor McDavid, who's now available, can actually say, nah, dog, I'm tapped out.
Yeah, I'm a jag. I'm just a guy. Yeah. That's what you should call this episode, I think. You got to put that in there. Yeah. So the World Championships, obviously, it's been kind of known as you only go if your team didn't make the playoffs or you get bounced in the first round. So it doesn't have the same allure as the Olympics or the Canada Cup back in the day or even that. What's that? The World Cup that they...
World Cup of Hockey, which may come back at some point.
That'd be awesome. But it's interesting you use Pettersson, Chris, as your example because I remember watching Petey in a interview with Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman during the All-Star break on a beach in Florida somewhere. And he didn't talk about the World Championships, but the question was, what's more important to you, Olympic gold medal or a Stanley Cup? And I'd say 95% of players would generally say Stanley Cup because of how hard it is to win. But Petey, unless I'm mistaken, but I'm pretty sure I'm not, he actually said Olympic gold medal. So it's... For a guy like him, it's very important to play for your country and to have a chance to win for your country, especially a country that's backed you and supported you through your early years. Having said that, he's also probably pretty smart, pretty savvy, and he knew that he wasn't going to fight this about the insurance for sure. But I really think, Chris, to answer your question, it depends on where you are in your journey. If you're long term, a 22-year-old, 23-year-old, and you want to play in the Olympics by the time you're 30, then get two cracks to do it, then maybe you do take that early call early in your career to at least get your name on team, for instance, Team Canada's radar. But I don't think everyone thinks like that. So I have no problem with a guy saying yes. I have no problem with a guy saying no. It's kind of a bad answer, but I'm really indifferent.
Yeah. I share that feeling. Like I think when I was younger, I'd have been like, how could you say no? But now that I'm older, you know, there's a much bigger picture to consider. And, you know, a player who, you know, travels world championships. Yes. That's an opportunity. That's quote unquote once in a lifetime until next season. When guess what? Your team's not in the playoffs and the phone rings, right? Like,
Why has Oliver Ekman Larson played for Sweden 8 years in a row?
No. Yeah. And I mean, like you look at someone like Ryan Smith who, you know, he'd probably still be playing if Canada called.
Yeah.
All the power to him and the players like him, but I will not knock a player who says, hey, I'm going to take this one off for whatever reason it might be. I want to skydive into active volcano. We're going to take ourselves a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
As we let off the NHL, Stanley Cup playoffs are transitioning into the conference finals. The predictions that Anna and I had, I don't know if we recollect, or I don't, if we ever committed to who was going to come out of the Florida-Toronto series, though I think we both wanted it to be Florida. We just didn't believe that that would be possible. Well, the hockey gods apparently answered our podcast prayers and had the Toronto Maple Leafs out, which, you know, I get it. There's someone on listening right now. I can't believe you're cheering against Canada. You know what? If Edmonton had been successful against the Golden Knights, which unfortunately, spoiler alert, they were not, I would be okay with Edmonton. Toronto, though, I just don't know what it is about Toronto and my dislike. I'm kind of like those father-daughter who cheer for the team playing.
Yes. Toronto. Yes. Those guys are funny.
I feel that's me, but Florida got through 4-1. In fact, the one is a gracious 4-1 to Toronto, the way that series went. Carolina 4-1 to against New Jersey. So you had the Eastern Final of the Panthers and the Hurricanes. And out west, you had a 4-3, a fairly solid competitive series between the Stars and Kraken. Stars went through this evening. Spoiler alert, we're recording on a Monday night. And Vegas beat the Edmonton Oilers 4-2 in a series that Edmonton had leads but could not find ways to close out games. So the West is Vegas and Dallas. Before we talk about who you have coming into the Stanley Cup, is there truly a conspiracy by the league to keep Canadian teams out of the Stanley Cup final?
Chris, there's no conspiracy. By the law of averages, there's only seven Canadian teams out of 32. That's less than 25%. So really, a Canadian team is only supposed to win one out of every 7 or 8 years on average. Now, of course, we're at 30 years now, and we know how hard it is to win a cup. But you cannot look at Dallas, Vegas, Florida, and Carolina, which kind of wrecks a little bit, and say, wow, those are four markets that are in the States, in no tax states, and really nice weather. Like, I'm not saying you're only going to win if you play in a warm place, but it's kind of fascinating. And I'm not sure if, you know, I'm really not sure if a McDavid or Matthews moves the needle in terms of ratings in the States. I think they would, but I'm sure the NHL would much rather have a McDavid, a Matthews, a Boston, a Seattle, even a big market, a New York team in the Final Four instead of Dallas, a big city, small hockey market though. Florida can't even fill their arena. Carolina kind of forgotten about, and I guess Vegas is maybe still the sexiest team of the four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I whenever I hear conspiracy, because you know in 2011, the league was against us. No, the league wasn't. It just, I mean, if you've been watching hockey as long as I have, and you have probably been longer, it's the same old sort of story. The whistle starts to go away more and more frequently as the, you know, mm-hmm. series go on. You know, there's less sort of official impact in that regard. A lot more is allowable. Yeah. Decisions don't always go your way. Yes, the league in 2011 had to have video down to the hundredths of a second to determine that it was, you know, this many hundredths of a second late. Like, that's odd, but in the grand scheme, I feel like the NHL, if they were to have a conspiracy against Canadian teams, why? This is a league that wants to make more money for its owners. And how do you do it? You make sure Canada is invested. Now, I'm not saying Edmonton means the entire country is watching. Toronto seems to think it is. But fairness to Toronto, they have a big market, the biggest in Canada, right?
Like,
you know, I feel that the NHL would want more of that. And to your point about, you know, moving the needle in the States, Boston. There's no way Boston loses to Florida in the first round if the conspiracy actually exists. There's no way Islanders and the Rangers are both out. Or if one of them happens to be, it's probably going to be the Rangers just to have a Jersey Islander matchup, right? Like I'm not suggesting you want the Rangers out, but you're maximizing the eyeballs here, the ones that are going to push that needle forward. But
yeah.
It's not going to go away. The same conversation will happen next season.
It'd be different if it was Vegas and Edmonton playing in game 7.
Yeah.
They didn't get there. And definitely if Florida, Toronto playing game 7, not even close. So those guys that blame, whatever.
CBC had put together an infographic of, you know, the Stanley Cup drought in Canada and all the, you know, Canadian teams' playoff performances. I was surprised that only one Canadian team since 94 has been to the Stanley Cup final twice, and that's the Vancouver Canucks. You know, the other Canadian teams that have made it to the Stanley Cup final have done it once.
So who has Montreal, obviously, in the Canadian division year?
Edmonton.
Edmonton's been there. They lost to Carolina, right?
Yeah.
Did Senators, Calgary get? Yeah.
And Calgary. What the heck?
Okay, so everyone except Winnipeg then. And Toronto.
In Toronto. Yeah. Toronto, I thought Toronto won the Stanley Cup when they got out of the first round this season.
The way things are going,
right? But no, I mean, it's just interesting that the Canucks, I mean, a team that, you know, we love to hate and sometimes hate to love, is the one team that has come closest. And it's we're talking about come closest twice. The two times they've been, 94 and 2011, they went right down to game 7 in a game that they were in it right down to the end.
Yeah.
Entirely different, you know, outcome, but entirely different experiences.
Totally. Anyhow. Totally.
But speaking about this season, let's start out east. You've got Florida and Carolina. Do you think Florida, I mean, okay, Florida has a chance, but yeah. Do they really?
Disclaimer, everyone listening, I am 5-7 in my predictions. I went 4-8 in the first round. First round's always a little bit unpredictable.
First round's tough too, especially when you start seeing the upsets.
I went 1-3 in the second round. I only picked Dallas. I had Edmonton. I had Toronto. I had New Jersey. And New Jersey wasn't so much an upset. They were only one point apart in standing. So Carolina and New Jersey. Having said that, I can't bet against Florida in the East right now. They've knocked off the President's Trophy, and they knocked off the team that probably had the most, well, I guess they had the most pressure on them. So Tkachuk, Montour, I really like Florida's game right now. I know they're the President's Trophy winner last year, so it's not like this should be a surprise. Sure, they snuck in as the second wild card. I'm taking Florida over Carolina.
Really? Okay. Yep. I can see your line to that happening, and I can actually in roll myself to the belief that it's possible.
Yep.
I just feel that Carolina, I mean, as hot as Florida is, Carolina is hotter. Mm. And if I have to flip a coin, Bobrovsky has been not inconsistent, but in, let's say, that series against Toronto, the one game that Toronto wins, Bob isn't hot. And so if your goaltender has such a off game that has that big of an impact and no one else can pick up that slack, there is some concern there.
Sure.
But I like, you're right. Florida, who do they beat? They beat the first and second seeds in their division.
Yep. Yeah.
You don't do that because you're a pushover.
Right.
Yeah, I still think I'm giving it to Carolina.
Okay, that's fair. Totally fair.
Now, in the West, you've got the Stars and the Golden Knights. Anna and I had said whoever came out of the Vegas-Edmonton series
would win.
Wins whom out of, like, to us, didn't matter if it was Dallas or Seattle, Vegas or Edmonton was going to go through.
Yeah.
Having watched Vegas play, I maybe have more questions. They did look fallible.
Yeah.
And one might suggest that some dark arts was what was the difference. I mean, what's not to suggest that if Darryl Nurse is in the game, that things aren't different.
Yeah.
You know, in game five loss. So,
yeah, you know, give me Ottinger over Aiden Hill any day of the week, but Vegas, I was so impressed with how their depth outplayed Edmonton's depth. And maybe I don't know enough about Dallas. I think you know that I actually got down to Seattle, and
saw that. I wasn't texting you to check in because I'm like, well, he's a Kraken play now.
CKC, Clay's Kraken commentary. I'm still not convinced that Dallas is depth, I guess my bottom line. So I'm taking Vegas in a tight one. I still say Vegas. You?
Yeah, and I'm still taking Vegas. I'm just not as like, oh yeah, Vegas all the way.
Sure.
I totally feel fair. You know, it's a closer series here. So if you have it as Vegas, Florida, are you putting money on Florida?
That's where I think their Cinderella stops.
Okay.
Although, why would it though? If I have them knocking off Boston, Toronto, and Carolina, I don't know. Maybe we'll have to come back and chat about this in about 2 weeks. Okay. Yeah. You?
So I have it as Vegas and Carolina, and I would give the nod to Vegas. Anna and I had Vegas, Edmonton as being whoever comes out of that has probably the greatest odds of winning the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
And I mean, if an upset were to occur, like if Florida beats Carolina, it's hard not to give them that look and say, let the rat loose.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that's true. If it's Vegas, Florida, I think we'd both agree that, sorry, if it's Vegas, Carolina, we would both agree that Vegas should beat Carolina, right? Yes. But if it's Vegas, Florida, intuitively, that doesn't make any sense because Carolina had 20 more points than Florida in the regular season. But the way Florida's playing, then, I'd have a lot of time for a Florida upset for sure. But I'm gonna see what these conference finals look like first.
Oh, certainly. And, you know, prognosticators, we sometimes try to be. But with, you know, as you'd say, what, you're 5-7, was it?
Yeah, great. Really good.
It's probably better than me. I need Anders to give me an update on all of my my prognostications. Oh,
he's still doing that, eh? That Anders is the best.
Yeah, he was. I don't know if he still does, but he was our list guy. I just know, like, in round one, I said, oh, Boston's going to beat Florida in three games. What I didn't realize was that it did have to go the full seven, and I did. Boston got three wins.
They did. They did. So, just the other team got four. You got it. Yeah. You got it.
As we look to wrap things up, Clay, thanks for answering the phone, responding to my text message. Because honest to goodness, you were at the bottom of my list. I had no one else left.
Anything for you, brother. Anything for you, man.
But in case our listeners don't know where to find you right now, where can they tune in and check out your stuff?
Thank you. For my Canuck stuff, on Twitter, I'm at Canuck Clay. And then on YouTube, the same. I'm at Canuck Clay. And on my YouTube channel, I do three or four live streams a week late at night, do some reaction videos, some pregame, postgame, and some new stuff. A lot more consistent when the Canucks are actually playing, but definitely would love for you to come check my workout at Canuck Clay, both on Twitter and YouTube.
And then you have the Canucks After Dark podcast.
Too, yes. Right? And with a young upstart, even more younger than you, Chris, if that's possible.
Is that why you bailed on me? You know, why C4 just became C4 with Chris and not Clay?
How about this?
I was too old.
No, just as you helped me out, I upstart Clay Emo out, I am helping Parker. No, Parker's a good, smart, bright guy. And yes, we're entering our third year now of Canucks After Dark, a weekly show on Monday nights at 10 p.m. on YouTube. Thank you.
Yeah, no, awesome. You're not yet the longest running.
Nope.
But in the grand scheme of things, you're getting up there because there's a lot of podcast fade in the in the Canucks podcast market. Again, thanks, Clay, for joining us. He told you where you can find him. For us, if you've reached this point of the show and you're curious, how can I support C4? Well, like and subscribe to the show because that's awesome. But better yet, tell someone about us. Anna and I have all sorts of crazy takes. The fact that she's smarter than me should surprise no one, but we have good fun together and we will continue to have fun over the course of the off season. If you were to say, well, I'd like to maybe throw a few bucks your way and buy you a pint, or if Clay happens to be there, we'll ensure that he gets himself a Coke.
Pepsi.
Okay. My bad. You can go to support.c4podcast.com and check out Buy Me a Coffee, or as Anna and I refer to it, Buy Me a Pint. You can chip in money on a one-off basis, a recurring basis, or if you commit to us for a full year, get yourself a discount. But on behalf of myself, Chris at Light Force, Clay at Cannot Clay, and missing in action, leaving me for a wedding in South Africa, Anna Force at 84603, signing off this episode of the C4 Podcast with We Out.